Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, we hear such a lot of negative news about China on many levels. Today, we have some really positive news, and it's work that they're doing with a very, very popular endangered species, the panda. And we're going to hear from National Geographic photographer Amy Vitale, who joined the National Geographic Wild crew for the first episode of their new TV series, Mission Critical. And I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. We'll also hear in the second half of today's show from a favorite of many listeners, New York Times and USA best-selling author Carla Negers. She always has the most interesting stories to share about her writing and travels, all in the name of research, of course. And we have a final summer giveaway on some books that have been collecting in my book room. So some of the books made it on the show, some of them didn't, but we'll be giving some of those away in between our two guests today. So let me tell you a little bit about Amy Vitale. She's a National Geographic photographer and Nikon ambassador. She's lived in mud huts and war zones. She's contracted malaria, donned a panda suit, all in keeping with her philosophy of living the story. She's traveled to more than 90 countries, bearing witness not only to violence and conflict, but also to what she calls surreal beauty and the enduring power of the human spirit. Recently, she's turned her lens to telling compelling wildlife stories. You can see actually the some of the photographs she took on this project in August's National Geographic magazine. And she also is doing some work on the second, I think it's the second or the third in the series, the TV series, about northern white rhinos, and they're trying to obviously save them from extinction too. She's a contract photographer with National Geographic magazine, and she frequently gives workshops throughout America, Europe, and Asia. Her work's exhibited around the world in museums, galleries, and parts of private collections. And along the way, she's garnered many prestigious awards, including multiple prizes from World Press Photos, the International Photographer of the Year Prize, Daniel Pearl Award for Outstanding Reporting, and the list goes on. But today, we sat down a couple of weeks ago, actually, and we talked about this new series that National Geographic Television is airing. It started yesterday, but you can still catch that either on demand or you can catch it on the website, and I'll give you that information at the end of our chat. And so we sat down and we talked about what she did while she was out there. We talked about how they get pandas in the mood to procreate. We'll talk about what might surprise you about baby pandas and more. But it's good news. I was really heartened to talk with her and hear some of this news. And I'll share a little bit more with you after our conversation. Amy Vitale from National Geographic Wild TV show Mission Critical Panda Babies. So we're talking today about the National Geographic Wild new series that's coming out. It's called Mission Critical. It's to raise awareness for endangered and threatened species. And we're going to talk in particular about panda babies, which is the show that kicks off the series. But I wonder, Amy, I just wanted to get some feedback here on how you got involved in this show in the beginning. It sounds like a wonderful project.
Oh, it is. It's a fantastic project. I'm actually a National Geographic magazine photographer and a filmmaker, but my story is in the August issue of the magazine. It's on newsstands right now and also online. And I got involved 3 years ago when I was part of a film crew, and I realized that this was an incredible, actually an unimaginable story, which I then pitched to Nat Geo magazine. Now they're starting this Mission Critical series, and it's really, you know, an effort to get people engaged and excited. And the panda is kind of an ambassador for all the species out there that are on the edge of extinction, truly, and need, you know, it's not too late to save them, but we're really at a crossroads right now. We're losing species every day.
It's quite frightening. I know some of the programs cover the rhino, which we know is in very critical situation, the mountain gorillas, saving the last devil, which I'm assuming is the Tasmanian devil. And of course, your focus, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. No, and exactly. And I mean, all these wonderful charismatic species, and the panda, really, the story was actually quite hopeful and surprised me quite a bit because, you know, I, like everybody else, probably only hears bad environmental news stories coming out of China. So you'd be hard-pressed to think that anything possibly good could be happening. And when I got there and really started researching and learning, and frankly, after 3 years of multiple visits and kind of meeting the people, meeting the pandas, getting my head inside of the pandas and seeing this incredible recovery story, it blew my mind. I mean, it's actually, the numbers are going up in the wild. They were, the last survey they did, there were 1,864, up from 1,600. And look, that could be because we're just better at finding them in the wild. But China's on this effort, this incredible effort to take captive-born pandas and release them back into the wild.
Well, I'm with you on that. I was really heartened to read this story and do some more research on it. Pandas, I didn't know, they've been around over 2 million years, for one. I mean, what a tragedy it would be if we lost them. And they were on the endangered list in the 90s. And China's diligently been working ever since to build those numbers up and are seeing really good success right now. So you went actually to one of the maternity wards, I understand.
Yeah, I was able to spend time at all the panda bases and everything from the maternity wards where, you know, it's incredible. I was there for the breeding, which you know, pandas have only 24 to 72 hours a year to get pregnant.
Oh, my
God. Which is a window. It's unbelievable. And then when they have their baby, it's just, you can't imagine that this is what a panda baby looks like because they're about 100, maybe maximum 200 grams. They're pink, hairless, blind. They look nothing like a panda. And then they grow like little bamboo shoots. Before my eyes, I watched these creatures that came out and turned into these adorable, cuddly, you know, they just melt your heart. So I witnessed that. And then I also got to go to other panda bases where, for example, we all had to wear panda costumes every day because they're training these pandas to go back into the wild.
Right.
After one generation, they don't know how to survive in the wild, one generation in captivity. So there's a whole, believe it or not, training program.
Yeah. Well, the photographs you took and people can see in the August edition of National Geographic magazine are phenomenal. Pandas are adorable. I don't know anybody who doesn't like pandas. But when they're babies, you're right, when they're born, they almost look like little mole rats. And they're about 900 times smaller than their mother. They're so, so tiny.
Yeah, it's basically like me giving birth to a baby that is 2 ounces.
Mm.
So it's so incredible. They're just magical creatures. And the more research I did, they just became more and more fascinating. The species they actually think is almost 8 million years old, and they were only discovered, the panda as we know it today, the first one was captured alive in 1936.
Wow.
Which is just not that long ago. And
yeah.
If you look at ancient Chinese art, you will never see a representation of a panda. You'll see every other kind of animal, pictures of bamboo, everything else, but they're that elusive. They were, at the time, is, you know, like a mystery as as we view Bigfoot today.
Right. I read that even though they're extremely needy, I mean, more needy than most animals when they're born, they're one of the fastest growing mammals, and they can grow literally from 4 ounces to 4 pounds in a month. Does that rapid growth continue? Do they mature very quickly?
They do. They do. Every visit I came, I couldn't believe it. But definitely in the, you know, in those early days, you just can see massive transformations. Then they grow up. I mean, they basically leave their mother at about age 2, and then they eat a diet of 98% bamboo. And they've evolved over those 8 million years to escape competition from other predators so that their whole system changed. They're basically vegetarian.
Right, right. And interesting fact, because, you know, I read, we know that humans adapt to the environment to suit us, but pandas adapt to suit the environment. They change to suit the environment. And part of the problem they've had, though, is that their vegetation is a lot more limited than it was. What are they doing? They're doing, I know they're doing, you know, they have efforts to move them around and spread the migration a little, but is that being successful right now?
Well, you know, what I know that they're doing is that the only real answer is habitat. Habitat's a big question. And so all that money that they raise from conservation, from renting the pandas out to zoos, all goes back into building more habitat. China's on this mission right now. They're spending billions of dollars to create more habitat for them, create reforest places, and link these existing corridors that wild pandas live in now so that they can move from, you know, from one terrain to the next. And so also, the, you know, it's not just the panda that's benefiting. Imagine all the other endangered animals in these forests that benefit as well. So they've got this whole national park system. They're developing 67 national parks, reserves. And so, you know, right now they're the most protected bears on the planet.
Mm. So you mentioned mating earlier, and this made me laugh because you just don't think of this with animals, but obviously we think of in vitro fertilization, right? So the eggs planted. But also they say they can't, when they want them to mate naturally, which obviously is the preferred method, they can't just drop the female in with the male because things can get very aggressive. So they use stimulus to create a mood for them. And some of the stimulus was they play videos that they term panda porn. They might use Chinese herbs, Viagra, and sex toys. Talk to us about that a bit.
Well, that was hilarious. So the director of the panda program, director Zhang Min, also affectionately known as Papa Panda, he told me this hilarious story where he was going through all these efforts because in the beginning they didn't realize that, you know, this very limited window to get pregnant and all these things that they had to learn. And in the 80s, he was doing everything, showing, as you mentioned, the panda porn, the Viagra. He even had to go and buy sex toys in a shop in Chengdu. He said it was so embarrassing. He said, I went to go get the toys, and I actually had to ask the shopkeeper for a receipt. And she looked at him like he was crazy and said, why do you need a receipt? He said, I have to expense this to the government. God.
Yeah, you could just imagine, oh, I'm buying these for my pandas. And the guy's thinking, yeah, right.
Honestly, people should tune in. If you want a story that in today's world, I actually think we need it on so many levels because it's funny. It will melt your heart. It's everything we need right now. And it's also hopeful because if China can do this and, you know, honestly, take a bear that was absolutely unknown in a densely populated, impoverished country and turn it into the spiritual symbol for the world, I think there's hope. And actually, you know, people always ask, well, what about the rhino and the elephant tusk? You know, I actually think a lot of good things are happening. Right now, China's government has taken the lead, and they've officially banned the elephant tusk trade, and they're closing all those carving shops. So things are moving in the right direction. Not to say we don't have a long way to go, but I think there is, you know, it's just not too late. And if people become aware and engaged in these issues, I think a miracle can happen.
Yeah, it is about raising awareness. And I'm wondering, when you went out there, obviously you've been involved in this for a long time, but what was one thing that really surprised you when you were doing your research and doing your photography?
Well, a lot of things. You know, I think, you know, in the West, if you only pick up the newspaper, it's, and frankly, not in the West, anywhere in the world, we're just given stereotypes and the most sensationalistic pieces of a story in any country around the world. And when I got there, I realized this was not what I was reading in the paper. There's you know, beautiful nature and parks and a lot of incredibly committed people that I met that care deeply, not just about pandas, but about all wildlife. And, you know, I think it's dangerous to just sort of only hear the most divisive kinds of stories, because that doesn't actually motivate action. And what surprised me was how much we have in common, how much everybody cares and is out there, you know, fighting hard for the right things.
Right, right. Well, I can't wait to see the program when it airs live. So I want to thank you for being with us today, Amy Vitale. I know you're really busy and, sharing your insight with us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. And I'm actually tomorrow on my way to Kenya back to work on rhinos. So tune in later for more rhino stories.
Awesome. Well, the show is called Mission Critical, and I'll give out all the air details in just a moment. And Amy Vitale is the contract photographer with National Geographic magazine that I was talking with. You can find out a little bit about that story in August's edition of National Geographic. She did the photographs for that. And you can also find out more just if you go to type in Nat Geo TV Mission Critical in your browser. It will pop up on National Geographic website, and you can catch repeats of that show. Usually they repeat them after about a week, and of course get them on demand. And there are many more shows coming. And, I think it's important that we support, if we're serious about conserving our animals, it's important to support organizations like National Geographic and National Geographic Wild TV, because Wild is the only network that continues to showcase world-class life specials every Sunday. It seems that things are more sensationalized these days, whereas National Geographic tries to keep things fairly authentic and gets to the heart of the story and raise awareness through the programming that they do. And I know that Jeff Daniels, the EVP and general manager of Nat Geo Wild, said he's very proud to present Mission Critical because it gives such a global perspective, and it's going out across the world. And it goes out, as I said, every Sunday night. Some of the other shows coming up, you heard Amy say that she's off to film or photograph the white rhinos, and it's called Mission Critical Operation Sumatran Rhino. That airs Sunday, September 18th, and they go to Borneo, and I don't know if you know this, but Sumatran rhinos are down to just single digits now. It's really serious, and I think it would be so sad if we lost these on our watch. And other shows include the Mountain Gorilla on Mission Critical, and lots more information there you can find at National Geographic TV. Just type in Mission Critical and it will all come up for you. Well, it's a slow process to bring those baby pandas back, by the way. I don't think we mentioned this in the interview. In 2015, 38 were born. And of course, not all of those do make it. Most of them do. And then when they've gone through their training, they'll be released into the wild. And, you know, some will survive and some won't. So it's a slow process. But I personally was very heartened to talk with her and hear all the great work that's going on. All right, so coming up next, we have the last of the summer giveaway books here. Some of these books, the guests have been on the show, some have not, but we've got six books here to give away before we talk with my next guest, Carla Neggers. And we're going to take a very quick break here, so please stay with us, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
My little panda bear, I love you. Yes, I do. And all the funny things you do, I love you. Yes, I do. You are my little panda bear. Panda bears are rare. Yes, it's true. There's only...
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
We're the black sheep of talk radio. Alternative Talk 1150.
I love you. Yes, I do.
Welcome back, everybody. There's love in the air today. So, remnant of the panda music. Where do you find this music, Eric?
Love for panda bears.
Love for panda bears.
You know, that's Kimya Dawson, who is a Washington native, lives in Olympia.
Oh, well, there you go.
Little panda bear.
Bringing it all home.
Well, it was a great discussion about panda conservation and getting them the mate and all that good stuff here in the first segment. So.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I would have loved to have seen the storekeeper's face when the doctor goes in and says he's looking for sex toys for his pandas. Could you just imagine?
I'm going to expense this. Could I please get the paperwork?
He's like, well, I've heard some stories, bud, but that beats them all. All right, so we've got six books to give away as the last of the summer book giveaways. And I'm going to kick off here with a book that's been called a groundbreaking exploration of the science of enlightenment and mental wellness. It's written by James Kingsland. He's a science and medical journalist with 25 years of experience writing for publications such as New Scientist, Nature, and The Guardian UK. The book is called Siddhartha's Brain, Unlocking the Ancient Science of Enlightenment. It's a really good book, and I'm sorry we could not get him on the show. Just my schedule didn't work with his schedule, and there was just no way that we could make that happen, unfortunately, while he was doing his book promos. But it's a great book. It's called Siddhartha's Brain. Now, if you would like to enter the drawing or the call-in for any of these books, here's how it's going to work. I'd like you to call our 800 number. It will go straight to voicemail, so you can just leave your name, your phone number and the name of the book that you're interested in, because we're going to give away six books here. Your name, your phone number, and the name of the book you're interested in. And it will go to voicemail. Nobody's going to pick it up. So just leave your message there. It's totally private. All right. So the number to call if you're interested in this book, Siddhartha's Brain, Unlocking the Ancient Science of Enlightenment. And why don't we take the third caller on all of the books? That will make it simple, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the number to call is 800-495-7617. Go ahead and dial now if you're interested in that. 800-495-7617. We'll take the third caller. And I can only call the winners of each book, okay? But you definitely will get a call. All right, Eric's going to read a couple of these out, but let me do one more before we go over to Eric. Let's talk about body intelligence. Harness your body's energies for your best life. Joseph Cardillo was on the show earlier this year. Again, a great book, great read. Certainly gave me a different perspective on energy and how I'm spending my energy, wasting my energy in so many aspects. And we may have him back on the show within the next couple of months. But he's a top-selling author in the fields of health, mind, body, spirit, and psychology. He's an expert in attention training, creative thinking, and body energy. And Dr. Cardillo has taught his methods to more than 20,000 students at various colleges, universities, and institutes over the years. He's a regular contributor to Psychology Today. And the name of the book, again, is Body Intelligence: Harness Your Body's Energies for Your Best Life by Dr. Joseph Cardillo. And again, the number to call if you're interested in that, we'll call the winners only, 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Go ahead and call now. All right, I'm going to kick over to you for a couple of books.
Okay.
Or your books.
Yes, we're giving away a copy of Irrelationship. Hopefully I said that right. The subtitle, of course, How We Use Dysfunctional Relationships to Hide from Intimacy. And we had one of the authors of this book, Grant Brenner, MD, on the show. And I'll just read I think the title kind of says it all about that, but I'll read the little quote on the back that they got from Mark Goldstone, who is also a doctor. And he says, Irrelationship is irrefutably your best chance to love happily ever after. So if you're looking for some help with your relationship, this may be the book for you. Give us a call at 800-495-7617. Leave your name and phone number. And if you're caller number three, that book is yours.
Yeah. Just make sure you say the name of the book as well, so we know who you're calling about, please.
Absolutely. And that was a nonfiction book. We've got a fiction book to give away as well. This one from Stephen Gore. It's called White Ghost. This is a Graham Cage thriller, or Graham Gage thriller, I should say. it looks like it's a pretty cool book. Stephen Gore is the real deal, says James Heyman, and you're going to want to check out this book. This looks like a pretty interesting thriller. So, again, it's White Ghost by Stephen Gore.
Okay.
800-495-7617, caller number three.
Awesome.
Mention that you want to win White Ghost and leave your name and phone number.
Awesome. So I've got a fiction one here. Let's do that. And then you've got one more, I think, to give away, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I'll do this one because this is my friend, Yasmin. She's actually my oldest, my oldest friend up here in Washington. I've known her for a long, 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 long time. And I do not know how many books she's written. I lost count. When I met her years ago, when I first moved to Washington, she'd written 30. She used to write just metaphysical and nonfiction work and books on sexuality. And then she turned to fiction almost as soon as I met her. She was looking for an agent, found the contract, and boy, she's written at least 30 more since then. And this one is a brand new series. She writes series a lot, and she had great success with her Otherworld novels, as they are called. And this is a start of a new series, and it's set in the realm of her Otherworld novels. And Sharon Kenlon, number one New York Times bestselling author, says Yasmin Gallinon creates a world I never want to leave. So if you like fantasy, urban paranormal, romantic paranormal, they call them, the genres have kind of blended a lot. But if you like that kind of stuff and you like to get lost in a whole other different world, this is the book for you. And it's funny because she sent me this book because I don't normally read that kind of stuff. But this was a brand new series and she was really excited about it. And she wanted to share her first book in the series with me. And I read this and there's a ghost scene in here that actually scared me so much. I had to get up and put the light on in the middle of the night. Oh, dear. There's confession for you. All right. So this book is called Flight from Death. It's a fly-by-night novel. It's called Flight from Death. Yasmin Gallinon is the author. And if you are interested in receiving or entering the call-in for this, please leave your name, your number, phone number, and your the name of the book on voicemail. And the number to call, 800-495-7617. 800-495-7617. All right, I think Eric's got one more to give away.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of thrillers, we got another one. This one's called Lie in Wait, and it's by Eric Rickstad. And he's also the author of The Silent Girls. And just to tell you a little bit about what this is about, in the remote pastoral hamlet of Canon, Vermont, a high-profile legal case shatters the town's sense of peace and community. Anger simmers, fear and prejudice awaken. Old friends turn on each other and violence threatens. So this sounds like a real nail biter and a real thriller. So
yeah.
If you want to win Lie in Wait from Eric Rickstad, give us a call, 800-495-7617. Leave your name, phone number, and if you're caller number 3 and you mention that you want to win Lie in Wait, you'll get that book.
Awesome. I don't know about you, Eric, but when I read fiction, to me, the place, I love books that have a really strong sense of place. And when I hear names like Vermont, it kind of conjures up this image of atmosphere and character, and it adds to the story.
Definitely.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that I like Carla Negus, because she's going to be my next guest. And I do have, not this one I'm holding in my hand, but I have a copy of this to give away in my studio. It's her new book is called Liar's Key, and we'll be talking with Carla in just a few minutes here. She's a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author. She's written more than 60 novels. You know, Yasmin, my friend, and Carla Negus here, we've talked to several times on the show. Really prolific authors. They're churning them out. I don't want to say churning them out because that sounds as though they're just throwing out stuff.
I'm sure there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into that churn.
Oh, trust me. I know there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into that. But it's amazing how I think both of them have told me in the past that the reason they write so often is because they have such strong deadlines, right? What do they say? Give yourself a goal and a deadline and it'll get done.
There you go.
But anyway, I have this book to give away, Carla Negus, Liar's Key. And in this book, this is the sixth in the Sharp and Donovan novel series, and about FBI agents Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan. And they get into a complex web of blackmail, greed, and murder. And Emma Sharp is in this particular book, she's suspicious when retired Special Agent Gordon Wheelock, a legend in FBI art crimes, drops by her Boston office for a visit. And one thing leads to another, and there's murder and mystery and suspense. And Carla travels around a lot in her books, from Maine, Boston to London, and Maine to Ireland. So there's always a lot of atmospheric character in these books. So again, Carla Negus, Liar's Key. If you're interested in entering the drawing, calling for that, please call the 800 number, leave your name, number on voicemail, and the name of the book, and the number to call is 800-495-7617. 800-495-7617. If you're the third caller, you'll be hearing from me. All right, that's it. That's the last of our summer final giveaways this year. So let's take a quick break and we'll get hold of Carla, and we'll talk to her about her latest book when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Dr. Nels Rasmussen at NelsHealingMinistry.com, we cover the world of animals. This Sunday, September 4th, it's Shelter, Rescue, Sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll have a great lineup of interviews with several local rescues, lots of good news about animals, some special features, and an update from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. Join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I'd build secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I'd do the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, New York Times bestselling author of The Perfect Storm and War, Sebastian Younger tackles today's challenges in America brought about by our loss of community with his new book, Tribe, on homecoming and belonging. We'll also hear from National Geographic writer and author of the world's wackiest roadside attractions. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific on Alternative Talk 1150 and find more than 400 podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Broaden your horizons. You'll be amazed at all the topics we cover on Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, I'm very pleased to have back with us Carla Negus. She's the New York Times bestselling author of more than 60 novels with translations in 24 languages. Those who remember Carla from before, I know she's a listener favorite, know that she began writing her own stories at a very, very young age, and I don't think she's stopped. I said before we went to break, she has to be one of the most prolific authors out there today. Her new book is called Liar's Key. Carla Negus, welcome.
Well, I am glad to be here chatting with you again.
And very pleased to have you here. Let's just say this before I forget. The Liar's Key is actually out tomorrow, right? So you're getting ready for this big release tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah. It's fun. It's hard to believe it's tomorrow. This is one of the books, you know, I've been working on it and thinking about it for so long, and now it's like here.
Yes, yes, and it's the sixth in the Sharp and Donovan series. It features FBI agents Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan, and it has an intriguing character in there, an ex-FBI person himself that I found very intriguing.
Gordy Wheelock, and he's a really interesting character because he's newly retired and he's a FBI legend in art crime primarily. Emma Sharp, of Sharp and Donovan, is an art crime expert herself, based in Boston, and worked under him for a little bit, but doesn't know him super well. And he shows up in her office with lots of questions and kind of on a little fishing expedition, and she can tell, and she knows he's up to something, and it takes off from there because he's not telling her everything, and things that he knows that he really should be telling her.
Right, right. And one of the characters from a previous book, Keeper's Reach, comes through in this story too. Oliver York?
Oliver, yes. Oh, Oliver is just one of my... He's a character... we now know that he is this brazen art thief. He's English, and he just has this really mysterious background. He's elusive. Emma and her family, her grandfather is this private art detective, very well-known art recovery specialist, and he and Oliver have had this, you know, cat and mouse game for the past 10 years, and now they know his identity, but there's no way to prosecute him or anything like that at this stage, and so he's hooked up with MI5. And he's just such an interesting, fun character. But he does have it's like, why did he become an art thief? And his past is pretty extraordinary. When he was 8 years old, his parents were killed in front of him. And then he was taken to this isolated part of Scotland and left. And he then escaped. And they've never caught the people who, killed his parents, and so he's just led this very solitary life, and now he and it's really because Emma and Colin, our two FBI agents, are just weeks from their wedding, and Oliver absolutely thinks that he should be invited.
And if listeners are curious, you have a picture on your blog, I noticed, of the Cotswolds, which is where Oliver has a farm.
Yes. In fact, in Keeper's Reach, he sent Emma and Colin some sheepskins.
Now, you've also bring in Irish priest Finian Bracken is one of your favorite characters. I know from talking with you last time, and his friend Mary Bracken. And I'm wondering, as I'm going through these, you've got two of my favorite names. Emma Sharp is Emma's my goddaughter.
And, oh, lovely.
And Colin Donovan, my brother's name is Colin. And I'm wondering how important, when you are developing a story, a series in particular, how important is the name to you as a writer?
Oh, it's very important to me. There's been times when I've started writing a book and the character's name just wasn't their name. And I had to go back and dig in and like get the right name. And there's this sort of this, you know, when you have it. It's funny because my daughter just had her third child, and her name is Neve Amalia, and the process of naming the child was similar. She just sort of knew what the right name was when she landed on it. And I'm like that with most of my characters. There might be a, you know, minor character that it doesn't matter as much, but something like Emma Sharp, once I had her name, I could really see her.
Yeah.
You know, the first book in the series is Saint's Gate, and Emma is a former novice with the Sisters of the Joyful Heart, this isolated main convent, and she arrives at the convent, and then a nun, a former colleague of hers, is killed, and she finds the body. And when I started, and I could see someone arriving at the convent gate, and I didn't quite know who it was, but once I had her name, everything came together for me, and in particular because she is Wendell Sharp's granddaughter, and Wendell he was a very minor character in a previous book, so it was so all of those connections were just really fun to figure out. But also, once I had them, things just gel, and I get this forward momentum from it.
I can definitely see that because I think there's a lot in a name. Salman Rushdie once said that he begins developing his characters with how they talk. He says that once he knows how they talk, that he knows the character. In other words, you know, what kind of words do they use? How do they format sentences? Do they use profanity? Does any of that go into character development with you?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned Finian Bracken, this Irish priest, and it's not just his... that he's Irish, that that I think about with his language, but it's his background, his way of seeing the world, and all of that comes out in his language. So that he had a very different path set out for him before he became a priest. He was a father of two young daughters, married, and his family was killed in a sailing accident, and he was also a whiskey man. So he was very caught up in the world of whiskey and distilleries and all of that, as well as being, you know, living in Ireland. And then he went to seminary and he became a priest. And so that change in him, I think, it really does affect his language and how he views the world, what he knows, how he thinks. And then he gets to this little struggling fishing village where Colin Donovan grew up, and he's the priest there. And it's so different from anything he's known. I remember one of the books, he's trying to figure out what a beanhole supper is. You know, it's like this main staple where you do baked bean supper, basically. But they actually dig the holes and put the beans down and bury the beans for a while to cook. And so that, you know, that kind of stuff, he starts trying to figure it out.
Right. You've told me before, because for listeners, you know, who've not heard you before, I've talked with Carlin Eggers several times. We're talking right now about her new book, Liar's Key. But you've told me before that ideas come to you from anywhere and at any time of day, any time of night. You might be grocery shopping or walking or, you know, dressing, whatever. They just start coming to you. But you say the trick is figuring out which ones are worth developing. In a story, you know, let's look at Liar's Key. What was something in here that came to you, and how did you figure out that it was worth developing?
That's really interesting. Yeah, that is how I think about a story. I have lots of ideas, and not every idea is going to turn into a story. Sometimes it'll be a piece of a story, and in Liar's Key, the story is this FBI legend, and once I had him and knew that he was going, in the first scene of the book, he's looking in the mirror and he's been bloodied and he can't remember at first, like, wait, what happened here? And then he kind of remembers, and he was attacked. And he's on his way to a meeting with the FBI, with Emma Sharp, and he hides his his wound so they can't see, and he's just going to go in there and not tell her the truth. Mm-hmm. And that for me was a real the story kind of went from there. And it's interesting because it is actually how it begins, and Liar's Key. It doesn't happen with every book, but Liar's Key, the opening was always the same opening.
Right.
It was just a question of whether I was going to have, whether it was a switching off of one scene or another, but it was all basically the same opening of him going into the FBI and being an FBI agent himself, a retired agent, a legendary agent, and not telling the truth. And then everything comes up, well, why isn't he, and what does he know? And what does it have to do with Emma and her grandfather and this art thief? And we throw in ancient mosaics.
Yeah, yeah, very intriguing. Is there a particular scene, talking of scenes, that's more difficult for you to write than others? Because, I mean, you've got so many different scenes in here. Character, Eric and I were talking when we were doing the book giveaway earlier about how place is always a character for me, and I love a strong sense of place, which is prevalent through all of your books. Is there a particular scene that's more difficult for you to write than others?
Well, I love the strong sense of place, so a scene that's easier for me to write is one when it is a very strong sense of place, when Mary Bracken, our Irish priest sister, is coming to America, and she's walking along a lane in Ireland and thinking about her trip and runs into Oliver. That scene was an easier sort of scene to write. Sometimes the real action scenes, like, say, those can be, I love writing them, but they can be hard to write because I want to make sure that that you have the forward movement of the scene. I want that in every scene, but also it's like you have to stay strongly in, for me, in the point of view character.
Mm-hmm.
So say you have a scene where one character is doing the action, like it's a fight scene or something, and the other, then the point of view character is not doing, is like on the sidelines. That changes the scene, and sometimes that can be figuring out who's the point of view character and what they're seeing, thinking, feeling, and what to reveal in the scene. Because you don't want to all of a sudden stop and explain things.
Right.
You know,
right.
So those scenes can be, I would say, hard. Any scene can be hard depending on what's going on in the scene, or challenging, I guess, would be the way that I try to think of it, because I want to be enthusiastic about every scene that I'm writing, because if I'm not enthusiastic about it, it probably shouldn't be in the book. But I like to bring that to the writing, and it makes it easier. But certainly some scenes are just, it's easier to get into the zone with them.
Sure.
Than other scenes. But I like to get there eventually. But with a fight scene, sometimes you just have to really think about who's where and the logic of the scene for why they're doing what they're doing. And I say fight scene, it can be action scene in general.
Right, right. One of the things I was interested to see on your blog, Carla, is that you started running again this year. You wanted to go into a marathon. But I was really interested in how you talked about you started 1 minute at a time because you hadn't run in so long. So you started 1 minute at a time. And you say, as a writer, I'm tuned into the power of incremental progress. So you were using really running as a metaphor for writing and writing as a metaphor for running. Just share a little on that with our listeners, if you would.
Oh, yes. It's actually something I want to write about more on my blog. I've just had like this insane time with a new baby and deadlines and life. So, but this is a topic that I just love because I actually ran my first half marathon last year. And so when I started to run it, I'm a hiker, walker all the time, but not a runner. And so I said, well, how can I do this? And I talked to a few people and finally arrived at the idea of doing this program that takes you from running 1 minute to running 30 minutes over 8 weeks. And it was really, I just followed it and I just did it that way because it trained my brain and my body to run that 30 minutes. Because part of what, for me, with the running is I just get bored.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's true too with writing. That sometimes if you sit and think about, I've got to write a 400-page manuscript, and I've got to research all this stuff, and I don't know anything about this, and I've never been there, and I don't know, and what am I going to do on page 276, and how many chapters is it going to be? And you just like get overwhelmed with all of this stuff, and if you just sit down and say, what's the version of just, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to write for, you know, what's the one-minute version for you? It can literally be writing for 1 minute, but it could also be, you know what, today I'm just going to write this first page, or I'm just going to figure out the name of my main character, or whatever it is, but you make that incremental progress. When I did the running, I started in the winter, and I don't like running on a treadmill, but it's cold in Vermont where I live.
Right.
And so
I
had this gap between my my sock and my running tights. So, and it was on my ankles and I was going to freeze. And so I said, I'm going to go buy socks. And that, just focusing on that one thing that I could do and doing it, allowed for me to have that incremental progress and that power of the incremental progress. And I started this in January, and on June 7th, I ran a half marathon.
Yeah.
And now I'm gearing up to, I want to run a half marathon next spring in Ireland. But it's the same kind of thing in writing, where if you just focus on that one thing that you can do, what's your version of buying the socks or running for 1 minute and building that up. And in writing, you can literally build it. If you build up to writing 30 minutes over time, over 8 weeks, that's a good thing. If you've never written before, because sometimes you can just do so much, and then you're like, you don't have anything for the next day.
Right. Well, we're right at the end of our segment, Carla. So that's a great note to end on today, because it's very positive, and one step at a time basically is what we're looking for here. I thank you for being with us again. The book is called Liar's Key, and Carla Negger's my guest, and you can find out more about Carla and the many, many books she's written at CarlaNeggers.com. CarlaNeggers.com. All right, we're right at the end of our segment, so I will see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.